Hi.
New York, New York, 10036. Pro country.
What you see is what you get.
Hell has no fury. He drives the most expensive car because second best never enters his mind.
Of all the billions of planets in space, only one is off limits to man.
It all began with a curse.
The evil you did this day will be avenged.
A curse.
From the mists of infinity, they come, rising from the cold, damp earth to take what is now theirs.
You are in a room filled with your friends, but they are all dead.
Night, when the earth is quiet, and the good people of the world are sleeping, the night visitor comes to call.
The streets have been taken over by thieves, dope addicts, rapists, muggers. We live in fear. One man is doing something about it.
These are the sounds of 6 feet of silver death.
Grindhouse Purgatory, 42nd Street, Pete.
Stepping back into the depths of the grindhouse, Pete Chiarella is here to bitch about something. You know, like Cinema Wasteland, you and I have talked about it. You and I have brought it up many, many times in the past. And you're a big booster of Cinema Wasteland, but there have been some issues of late, correct? By, like, you know, people not showing up, and there's been some controversies around Cinema Wasteland, but I've always thought Cinema Wasteland, honestly, was one of the more reputable and kind of, I wish I could have gone to some, you know, I'm not a con guy, but Wasteland's right. One of the ones that seem to have been more actually for the fans instead of like a Fangoria convention or Flashback Weekend or all that, which seems to be about fleecing the fans. Does that make sense?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, to understand where this is going, you would have to have some history, which I will give you. But first, I have to throw out a disclaimer that I in no way, shape, or form represent the management, promoters, or owners of Cinema Wasteland in any way, shape, or form, and any opinions I may have on any subject about Cinema Wasteland or about other conventions are strictly mine and no one else's. So on that note, the horror convention was conceived back in, I would think, the 80s. See, there was only a couple. There was FanX down in Baltimore, then Famous Monsters did one, and then Fangoria used to have their Weekend of Horrors, which was basically a Pheasant Under Glass affair, where basically you would be handed a photo or pick a photo, would be handed over your shoulder to a guest who wouldn't even interact with you, would sign, "Hey, Bob," you know, whoever, and it would be handed back to you. There was never any interaction with the guests. Well, Chiller Theater started in about 90, and they started bringing in the cool guests like Zachary Lee, Jonathan Harris, then Herschel Gordon Lewis, Diane Thorne, Ted Michaels, David Friedman, people like that. But, of course, if you follow the history of Chiller, you'll see that it has just mutated into this huge, overblown, it had over 100 guests out in the tent, and now it's just an overblown autograph show. But, again, it's still there. Now, what happened was, while I was working for Chiller Theater, I met Ken from Cinema Wasteland, because he was a road show back then, you know, vendor going from convention to convention. So Ken decided that he wanted to come up with a convention that would be true to the genre roots and also provide one of the best shopping experiences for the fans. So he basically took some of the best elements out of the existing conventions, added a few of his own, and came up with Cinema Wasteland. And one of the things he did come up with was the reunions, because he was the first to have a Dawn of the Dead reunion, a Texas Chainsaw reunion that was actually asked to be repeated by the cast, you know, 10 years down the road from the first one, a Street Trash reunion, a Frank Henenlotter Fest with, you know, Frank was there with people that were in all his movies. Basically, you know, it was one of the only conventions that doesn't charge to show indie films and shows actual films on 16 millimeter. What happened was I was friends with Ken. Oh, 20 or so years. And he was always on my case to come up and check out the show. Well, I was with Chiller Theater, and I was like, you know, a medium-sized fish in a big pond, for lack of better words. But then things went to shit there. Then I wound up at Monster Mania, and that's another whole story.
Well, I'm going to stop you real quick. Now, you made the unconventional documentary. Was that Chiller?
That was Chiller.
Okay, what happened with that? Because we might as well pimp that a little bit, since it's you know, no matter what happened, it's not a bad documentary.
Well, I had wanted out of Chiller for a while, but I kept being told how valuable I was, yada, yada, yada. Well, then someone had approached me about making a documentary about Chiller. So I brought this to their promoters. A deal was made. The documentary was shot. And that sort of led to my exit from the promotion because certain people felt that I played star. What happened was I secured the location, made sure the promoter was taken care of with the stripings, just in case anything went wrong. People were given credits. Everybody, you know, got their face on camera and in the movie for like, you know, whatever. And, you know, I was one of the producers and I was paid a fee to be the narrator, which that was the extent of my involvement. Well, certain people took umbrage to it and it led to a falling out. So that I was out of Chiller. I went down to Monster Mania. That was okay for a while, but again, there was some kind of shit happened there. So Ken was, like I said, Ken was always, you know, take a ride up. So I took a ride up, and the show that we came into was the infamous night where a transformer blew, plunging the place into total darkness around 11 o'clock at night. It was Dante's Inferno, where I was basically in my, you know, element because I, you know, was still a partier at that stage of my life, you know. And the one thing about Chiller, we used to have a great after-party thing going on. And Wasteland continued, you know, with that tradition, without anybody being destructive, without rooms being trashed, without anything really fucking bad happening, because it's a cool show and the fans police it. So I had just come up as a patron, and then I came up, got a table, came up and, you know, did a show. And then that was around the time the Tarantino debacle Grindhouse came out. And everybody was talking Grindhouse. Well, I came up and I did my first Grindhouse panel with my good friend and stuntman actor and author extraordinaire Gary Kent and the late great Ted B. Michaels. And that was my big push into Cinema Wasteland, because prior to that, okay, I was a known entity, but all I was a fucking voice on the PA. I really, you know, hadn't done anything in front of a crowd, you know, and anything like that. So that was such a good success that we had another one. We had Jamie Gillis up right before he passed away, Bill Greffey and Lynn Lowry. And we've had other ones, Dave Hewitt and Dave Friedman. I mean, I've done some great, great stuff there, and the show has given me the opportunity to branch out and do these things. Plus, a lot of these conventions were bringing in people like Seika and Ginger Lynn and people like that, but they really weren't doing anything with them except letting them sit at a table and sign pictures. I was interacting with them because of my, you know, background in the industry of, you know, selling videos and being with distributors and all this other stuff. So I would work out a Q&A talk with them where I basically sit down with them the night before we were supposed to do it, make sure what was cool and what wasn't cool to get into. And those became a great success. And then I was putting together, what I called the hardcore wrestling family hour, where I was, at first I was just culling about an hour of, like, you know, deathmatch stuff from Combat Zone Wrestling, IWA Mid-South, IWA Japan, all this blood and gut stuff. Well, then one of the original deathmatch wrestlers, Mr. Insanity Toby Klein, was a patron of Wasteland, and we became friends. And now, right now, we co-host, you know, the hardcore family wrestling hour every Saturday there. And then for a while, I was with the stage show at night doing 42 questions from 42nd Street Pete, which was a trivia thing where it was like 42 trivia questions. And whoever got, you know, the ones right, you know, got a, you know, a weekend pass for the next show and shit. So it's all been good. You know, There is no other show like it. It's a niche show. It caters to a certain point in time, you know, the Grindhouse and Drive-In area from the mid-50s up until the mid-80s. And, you know, not to say there aren't other good shows out there. There are other niche shows. There's Monster Bash, which caters to classic horror, you know, out in Pennsylvania. There's also, you know, Horror Realm down in Pittsburgh, which is like trying to find its niche, and they put on a good little show. Other shows, you know, I can't vouch for anything I have never been to, so I can't speak on the subject, except that, I just look at what goes on and the same, you know, people in and out, in and out, in and out. And it's just like, you know, the flavor of the day, who's hot, Walking Dead, Sid Haig, Devil's Rejects, you know, whatever. And it just seems to be, to me, that, you know, the same played out guests with the huge dumb photo ops and ripping people off and shit like that. And like I said, Wasteland has had some, you know, great anniversaries, and, you know, this coming Wasteland, April 7th, 8th, and 9th at Holiday Inn in Strongsville, they're going to have the first 50th anniversary of Night of the Living Dead with the surviving cast members.
Well, so what's the difference then between a con like this and, say, a Flashback Weekend or something, other than the whole overpriced celebrities? Because what I've noticed is Wasteland is much more, I hate to say it, for the fans. They don't seem to charge for all of this stuff. It seems to be more, you use the term kind of niche, but it seems to be more focused. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, Ken does what he wants to do, and that's it. He, you know, he doesn't cave into, oh, you should have Walking Dead people there, or you should have this one there, or have that one there. If they've been there once or twice, they've been there already. You basically have 2,000 to 3,000 dedicated fans, mostly the same people, that come to every show. Some only come to the April show, some only come to the October show. But, you know, it's the same group of fans. And what it is, you get 63 hours of programming for whatever the price of admission is for the whole weekend. We show actual films, grindhouse films, on 16mm. I supply a couple of them. This show, I'm my Prince of Corridors of Blood with Boris Karloff and Christopher Lee, and Day of Anger with Lee Van Cleef is running. So in addition to that, you know, we have, you know, they show films on DVD of, like, you know, guests that are there that we don't have 16mm prints of their stuff. You know, like I said, he shows the independent films, and he doesn't charge independent filmmakers a fee to screen their stuff, which a lot of other cons do. So, you know, and there's no extra charges for anything.
Not to make this sound too much like a commercial, let's talk about the con scene in general. What do you see? Do you see the con scene collapsing in upon itself with the way, like, The Walking Dead have kind of taken over the con scene? You know, people that are minor or secondary characters on The Walking Dead will be charging $100 for a photo and all this. To me, it might have been you that said this, but The Walking Dead is this generation's Star Trek when it comes to fandom, cosplay, and all
that.
Yeah,
I probably did.
It sounds like something you'd say. But, I mean, and I'm not trying to just shit on Walking Dead, but, I mean, you've got people who haven't made a movie in 20 years that just make their living off the con. I have people that say I'm being an asshole for saying that they're wrong for that, but it's like, then get out there and make a movie again. Don't just charge fans $50 to say hi to them.
Well, let me be the devil's advocate on that, because I know a little bit what goes on sometimes behind the scenes, unfortunately. A lot of these guys, you know, as much as Quentin Tarantino blows a lot of these guys in interviews and shit like that, he don't use them, so they're not working. Basically, the only work the guys that, you know, we know and love are getting are indie guys that are basically paying them X amount or what they get for being in a convention, which brings us to the other point that really fucked up the conventions, was the guarantees. You know, up until a certain point, no one asked for a guarantee to be there. Most of the time, you know, I was lucky when I got into it that, you know, these people were just so happy about being rediscovered that money was a secondary consideration. Well, unfortunately, and I'll point the fucking finger right at it, Monster Mania decided to pay Robert Englund $35,000 to be there the first time.
Well, just recently that story came out, like, you know, near the end of 2016, like around Halloween 2016, that a Walking Dead actor like Norman Reedus or something can make more money signing photos in one weekend than he'll make off of an entire season of The Walking Dead of actually shooting it. That's sad.
I know it's sad, but unfortunately, I'm gonna call it like it is. We live in a mark culture, and a mark is a derogatory term for a fan who basically marks out. It's a carnival term because marks were the people the carnies took advantage of. And these people will line up and pay ridiculous money for that fucking 5-minute interlude or 5-second interlude with that fucking celebrity, which I think is ridiculous. I mean, some celebrities are nicer than others, but you know something? If you just charge me $50 to fucking get an 8x10 that cost you 50 cents signed, and then you want another $50 for me to stand next to you and take a picture with my own camera, suck my dick. Really.
You see, I have never paid for an autograph. I have numerous autographed comic books, posters, some action figures, t-shirts, stuff like that. I have never paid for one of those. Every single autographed item I've gotten is by getting to know the person and them going, you know what, you're a cool guy. I will not pay for an autograph, nor do I expect to be paid for mine. A little bit of behind the scenes here. About 2 years ago, the 1201 Beyond store, where you could order t-shirts and stuff, pimp, there was a glitch. When people would pay for a t-shirt, it wouldn't actually go to the printer. The money would just go into our account, and I didn't know this. So there were all these back orders of t-shirts that weren't being sent out. So we got that all fixed, and to make up for it, we asked all the people who ordered shirts, you know, we want to give you something to make up for our screw-up. It was our mistake. We're going to make it right. Everyone said, how about an autographed item from Josh, like from one of his writings or something? So I autographed all these different magazines and stuff and sent it to him. And you know what, Pete? It felt fucking weird. Why would somebody want my signature wrecking an otherwise good magazine?
Yeah, I don't know either. I got a lot of requests for, you know, from people that sign the covers of the DVDs, and I'm like, hey, if that's what you want, you're buying the damn thing. I don't see where my signature makes it greater than anything it's worth. But you know, that's the culture we live in. You know, it's fucking weird. And it would address something that you started at the beginning of the show about heat about no shows at Cinema Wasteland. There really hasn't been. I can tell you that the only no shows that I know of, where unfortunately Bill Margold, because he had an anxiety attack and didn't come. The same thing happened with Robert Kerman, anxiety attack, and he didn't come. Lou Perryman was murdered on his way to the show. Other than that, I don't really know anybody who didn't show up. Oh, Vanessa Del Rio, but she got weird at the end and couldn't understand how this whole thing worked, and then she blew it off. But other than that, I don't really know anybody else who didn't show up. And like I said, the show is not centered around autographs and guests. It's centered around the whole grindhouse drive-in culture. And, you know, Ken tries to make sure he doesn't repeat guests, and he tries to make sure that he doesn't do the same thing twice. And sometimes, you know, I've been to other shows where, you know, celebrities that I will not name have walked up to him and basically, you know, oh, yeah, I haven't been at your show in a while. No, but you've been at every show within a 100-mile radius of it, so, you know, what the fuck, you know?
No, so. I hesitate to use the term greed, but when it comes to like, and I'm not singling him out, I'm just using him as an example, like a Norman Reedus. He seems like he's a really nice guy in real life, and people that have met him have said so. So that's why I want to be clear, I'm not calling him an asshole, just using him as an example.
Yeah.
If a Norman Reedus goes out to a show like this, it seems to be more about ego stroke of going, yeah, I really am that good. Look at these fucking lines around the block. Then it is about, I really want to meet and interact with the fans. Because I've seen at some of these cons, you got people like Sid Haig who just love interacting with the fans. He loves talking to them and stuff like that. And then you have these other ones that are so aloof, and like Adam West recently, he was at one a few years ago when people were like, he didn't even know where he was. He was almost being robot controlled by his manager, who would be, and the guy's name is Steve, right, Steve, on this? Oh, yeah, you know, and he's just an automaton.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, a lot of them get, you know, hooked up with these representatives that take advantage of them in their declining years. And, you know, I'm going to, you know, this is this thing. there were some people, like you said, Sid Haig and others, Michael Berryman, who were genuinely glad to go out there and meet their fans and make a couple bucks doing it. They're not, you know, I've never seen Sid charge anybody for a picture with him or anything like that. I've always seen him keep his autograph price down. I think it's $20. I've never seen him coerced into doing anything stupid by a rep. But I can't say the same for other people. And, you know, a lot of you fans, you know, don't get the idea that these people are there because they want to meet the fans. That's all out the fucking window. That was when I first started this. That's when the people like Dave Friedman and Herschel Gordon Lewis and Ted Michaels didn't even know they had fucking fans, didn't know that their movies had a shelf life past, you know, the theatrical run, and they were actually glad to be out there. The rest of them, and, you know, this is going back to the Night of the Living Dead thing. Cinema Wasteland has every cast member there except for the director. And there was an offer made. See, unfortunately, that, you know, I would have to go, if this was me, and my film that made me famous and, you know, brought me all this acclaim and has been just now put in the Museum of Modern Art, that somebody is celebrating its 50th anniversary. If that was my film, I'd want to be there. Well, like I said, an offer was made. The offer was declined, and he will be at a lot of other shows charging fans $70 for a fucking signature or whatever the hell it is, and more for a photo op. So, and this is through a handler, but the contact was made with him directly, and he declined the offer. It was only for 10 hours work. I would basically work, 3 months to make that kind of money he was offered. So, don't get me wrong, love George, love his films, but I just think it's a slap in the face to the fans to, like, blow off the first 50th anniversary celebration with all the original cast members and some tech guys and things like that. And this is probably the only time all these people will be together again because, look, we just lost George Cassana, Bill Heinzman a couple years ago. Nobody's promised tomorrow. There's only a few of these people left. But no, that's my opinion. If that was me, I'd want to be there, and I wouldn't give a fuck about the money. But obviously, I'm in the minority because whether you like to hear this or not, a lot of these people only give a fuck about the money.
And unfortunately, that does happen. But yeah. I don't want to paint everyone with that brush because there are some people who go to these cons. I can't remember if it was Sid or somebody else who said they didn't even want to charge for an autograph, but it's part of the requirement now. If you're at some of these larger cons, you have to charge. You can't choose not to.
Yeah, I know. And I'm not painting with the same brush either. I mean, Ernie Borgnine hated the charge, but if you got him after hours and he was hanging around, he'd be glad to sign. Lance Hendrickson was outside having a smoke break sign, and he said he hated to do this shit. You know what it should be?
Lance is a great guy in real life. I've spoken to him a few times. Lance is one of those guys that truly does go, you people put me here, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, well, a lot of people should be that way. I'm no fucking celebrity by any stretch of the imagination, but I appreciate the fact that, you know, if people didn't buy my stuff and, you know, read the magazine and shit, where would I be? But, you know, we work at it. That's the whole thing. You know, I would tell nobody, don't quit your day job to do anything like this because you don't make any fucking money. I'm lucky because, you know, I mastered a few deals here and there and I get paid for a few things, but I'm not about to go out there and charge fans for signing a DVD of mine that they already bought or a fucking magazine that they already bought. You know, you buy the magazine for me, I sign it. There's no extra with that shit. People should be glad to do that. Should be glad that fans appreciate them enough to even want their fucking signature.
But I think that's kind of an inherent arrogance that a lot of people have when they get to a certain level. They think they're owed fandom. I mean the stars that they think I'm owed adulation. You know, that my signature now has value.
Boris Karloff's signature has value because there wasn't a million of them out there. If anyone honestly thinks that a standalone signature of any of these people that are at a convention at any given time, at any given weekend, is worth more than what you paid for, you're sadly mistaken.
But on the opposite side, you have the fandom who, in a way, feels like they're owed something. Because you also get this, maybe like after the con, like Lance, you said Lance Henriksen was out having a cigarette and people were asking him to sign stuff. He's a gracious guy, so he did it. Would he really have been out of line if he had said, guys, I'm on a break, can we not do this right now? And if he had done that, there would be all these stories on the internet about how he's an asshole who doesn't appreciate his fans. People gotta also understand, these are people. They have lives too. I can't even count how many stories there is of some celebrity eating in a restaurant with their family and having people come up and ask him for autographs. They also, they're real people too, and they get private time.
I know. That's what you got. You got to respect that. I would never do anything like that, but other people would. I mean, I've worked with some, believe me, you know, I've been doing this since, oh God, the Chiller started in 1990. So you figure, God, how many fucking years? 27 years of this shit?
Yeah.
Yeah. I
worked on a movie with Tony Shalhoub, and then I later covered that movie's premiere in our area for the TV station I worked at the time. Now, I was an idiot. I didn't realize Tony Shalhoub was married to Brooke Adams. I have an original 1978 Invasion of the Body Snatchers poster hanging on my wall. If I had known that Brooke Adams was going to be there when Tony introduced me to his wife, I hate to say the fan in me, I would have wanted to bring that poster down and ask her to autograph it. Would it have been rude? Yeah. I still might have done it, though.
No, I start, you know, the funny part is, like, I'm lucky that I got to, you know, just work and hang out with some really fucking wild people like David Carradine and Tim Thomerson, you know, Jeffrey Combs, Michael Berryman, you know, just sit down, shoot the shit, smoke a joint, drink a beer, whatever, like fucking real people and shit. And sometimes their careers never even came up in the conversation. So it's all been cool.
And that's the best way to do it. So on that note, you mentioned your magazine. Tell people where they can get a copy of Grindhouse Purgatory.
Well, the new one should be, I just approved the cover, and it'll be Amazon. It'll be on Amazon. Issue 9 is all women in Grindhouse issue. It has a shot from the movie poster of Deep Thrust with Angelo Mayall on the cover. And, should be out before April, I think, but, you know, our editor is going to, or actually our layout guy is going to a convention, this weekend at Horror Realm. If you hear this before Saturday, Horror Realm in Pittsburgh, horrorrealm.com. Find all the good shit there. But, it may be out before, you know, by the end of March. I haven't seen the inside yet. I just approved the cover. So, you know, we're halfway there.
This has been a 1201 Beyond production. Find it and other great content at 1201beyond.com.